Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. I am Dr. Minette Riordan with MinetteRiordan.com, and every once in a while, it's so much more fun to listen to someone else talk rather than myself, and I'm super excited to introduce my awesome special guest, Coach Lisa Braithwaite, to you in just a moment. And before I introduce Lisa, I just want to tell you why I chose her to come and speak. So this is my 13th year of being an entrepreneur, and by far the number one most successful marketing method I have used to grow my business as well as to increase my confidence has been public speaking. And I actually met Lisa pretty quickly after I moved to Santa Barbara a couple of years ago and have had fun watching what she's up to, getting to know her better, and just being really impressed with all of the work that Lisa does. And she's just she's a rock star in her industry. And so I'm super, super excited to have her share her expertise. And, you know, I know there's so many people who are terrified of public speaking, and I'm hoping Lisa's going to share some tips and some secrets with you today that will really make it easier to get yourself out there, at least in some small ways, and just start engaging differently, like I said, not just from a business growth perspective, but also from a confidence-boosting perspective. Public speaking is just an awesome tool. So, Lisa, welcome. I am so excited you're here.
Thank you for inviting me. And I hope you can hear me because I was playing with my microphone a minute ago and I thought I might have turned it off.
Nope, I can hear you just fine. So you are still here with us. I know, technology is so crazy. So I was interviewing someone else a couple of months ago. And in the middle of the interview, she's speaking, and all of a sudden, it's just like there was all this, you know, crazy static on my line. And so I just said, you know, I'm having all this static. I'm going to dial back in. And she just kind of carried the show for a few minutes, you know. And it's and I guess that really leads nicely into our topic about, you know, learning to love public speaking and why it's a great tool for building your business. But first, Lisa, I don't really love to read bios. You know, I would love for you to just share with everybody what it is that you do, and we'll share again at the end how people can get in touch with you. But I'd love for you to share your story about how you got started as a public speaking coach and also about the business and the work that you do with people currently.
Well, I got started as a public speaking coach because I, you know, you've heard this expression, unemployable, right? There's actually a new Facebook group and magazine called Unemployable Woman, which is really great. And I literally became unemployable after being laid off 3 times in 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And, man, I was tired of it, you know. And what I had been doing, I'd been working in nonprofits. For a really long time, doing community outreach, a lot of speaking, a lot of group facilitation training, all of that kind of thing in these various organizations. And so I had a long background of standing up and getting in front of audiences. And I had a bachelor's degree in theater, so I had a performance background as well as a master's degree in education, which meant that I was actually able to put together a curriculum and a program. And so after the last time I got laid off, I'm sitting at the computer kind of like looking for some sort of part-time job because at the time I was also running a nonprofit that I had founded. And I didn't want to completely go for a full-time job because I still wanted to work on that. So I'm looking for like some ridiculous $10 an hour part-time job. And my husband says to me, why don't you just start a business? Because between the two of us, we had a long list of ideas of things that we wanted to do. And it was his idea, so I'm going to give him all the credit. He said, why don't you start a business? And actually, the easiest and quickest business I could think of to start was a jewelry business because I had been making jewelry as a hobby for probably 20 years. And I thought, okay, this is something I can do quick. I can just jump right in. And during that period of starting my business, I also joined Women's Economic Ventures, which you know, in Santa Barbara, a women's entrepreneurship organization that does a 14-week self-employment training. So I signed up for that. And I was still doing speaking for my nonprofit at the time because my nonprofit didn't lay me off. And I had someone in my class who saw me speak for my nonprofit ask me if I could help her. And she said, you just look so comfortable on stage. You look so confident, like you're having a good time. And she went on and on about how she wanted to feel that way and look that way on stage. And the light bulb just went on over my head. And I thought, wow, I mean, this is what I've been doing already, getting paid by employers to do this. And I had been doing it for a long time. I knew how to do it. I know how to teach. I know how to train. I know how to teach people and coach people how to do things. And that was it. And within 6 months, I had started this business. And that was 9 years ago. And here I am now. So what I do is I offer individual coaching to people who have specific needs that they want to work on in a customized way. I also offer group programs, mostly virtual online, but occasionally offer live group programs in Santa Barbara. And I do corporate training. So I also go and speak for organizations and companies that want to offer training for their employees.
Awesome. And one of the things that, you know, I appreciate about you and that I noticed in your bio and commented on and you say you help people with is your sense of humor. Like, you have the most engaging sense of fun and humor, and that's really, you've leveraged that into a new program, right, with the Audience Avenger Alliance, right? Did I say it right?
Yes, it's the Audience Avenger Alliance. Exactly.
And so tell us a little bit about that, because I love the whole superhero model, and I love the sense of fun that you bring. So is that something that was really innate to you, or is that something you really had to work on to incorporate more in your speaking? It's one of the things that I know I found challenging, you know, coming from an academic and teacherly background, just how to be more engaging in front of an audience.
Well, this is actually something that I am focusing on right now, not specifically humor, but just letting the real you come out and not being so worried that getting on stage and being the goofball that you really are is going to make you look unprofessional or somehow ruin your reputation. So we have all these speakers, all these people who get on stage who maybe in real life are fun and hilarious and just people that you want to be around, and then they get on stage and all of a sudden they're stiff and boring and not engaging the audience. So I have been focusing on this, and in fact, something I'm gonna talk more about later is a 5-part video series that I'm having in a couple weeks called Public Speaking for Awkward Dorks.
And I love it.
It's exactly for the people who, like me, grew up feeling like a weirdo and a wacko and a goofball and a kook, whatever word you call yourself. I like dork. And who sort of grew up with that impression of yourself and maybe even learned to embrace it over time. But then you get into maybe a corporate kind of environment. Or maybe you're an entrepreneur and you're starting your own business and you feel like people won't accept you if you really let that goofy side of yourself show. So then you become this sort of robotic presenter. And so the Audience Avenger Alliance is my membership program. And I'll tell you, here's what we do in the Audience Avenger Alliance. We liberate audiences worldwide from dastardly presentations by rising above the status quo and delivering bold and courageous messages.
I love that. I love that.
And you know, the goal of me starting the Audience Avenger Alliance was to gather people together who are just sick of sitting in audiences where the speaker is boring, they don't care, they haven't got the faintest interest in serving their audience. Well, you can't change that other speaker, but you can change yourself. And you can make your presentations the ones that save those audiences from those other dastardly seekers. So that's what the Audience Avenger Alliance is about, just to say, screw it. I'm tired of business as usual, and I want to be who I am, as goofy and kooky and dorky as I am, and I want to get on stage and do that and just be me, while also delivering my message and serving my audience and all the things that you do in an effective presentation.
Excuse me. So that, I think, feeds in brilliantly to my next question is, you know, obviously teaching people to, you know, be themselves and be natural would be one essential of public speaking that I'm sure you teach. But what would be some of the other essentials of public speaking? What are the, you know, your top tips that you feel like people need to know, whether they're just starting out or whether they've been speaking and are not feeling very confident about their ability?
I would say, well, it's all the same whether you're just starting out or whether you're experienced, but I actually think these might be worse habits. Some of these might be worse habits of experienced speakers, and some might be worse habits of new speakers. My core focus areas when I work with clients and when I teach classes are, number one, putting the audience first. So as I said earlier, focusing your energy on serving the audience and providing something of value to them that they can go and use right away. Not enough speakers do that. They're very me-focused, and they go into a speaking engagement thinking, am I funny? Am I smart? Am I showing them how brilliant I am? Am I witty? And then the flip side is, am I going to make a lot of mistakes? Am I going to, you know, mess up? Am I going to bore people? That's the downside of the me. Instead of just going in and saying, how can I give the audience what they need, want, and care about? How can I best serve them and give them an amazing experience? So that's one of my core focus areas. Another one is being your true authentic self, which this is kind of rising to the top right now, because I think there are a lot of people out there who feel like they can't be that person on stage and also be professional. Like somehow being yourself, which may be a little bit goofy, is mutually exclusive with being professional. And then the other two things, the other two core focus areas that I educate a lot about are preparation, because most people don't do enough of it and don't even know how to do it properly. And having fun, just having a good time on stage, enjoying yourself, engaging with the audience, having a conversation, building a relationship, making it fun for them and making it fun for yourself.
I love that. Brilliant. Because if it's not fun, we're not going to want to continue to do it, or we're not going to be successful at it. It shows if people up on stage are not having fun. I remember when I gave one of my very first presentations as a new business owner, I got asked to speak to a Rotary Club, and it was a big group, probably, I don't know, 50 to 75 people in the room. And I came from, you know, an academic background, so I'd done educational presentations at conferences, and I had been teaching for years, but standing up in front of my peers, Lisa, felt so different. And I had 20 minutes to give this presentation. I gave it in 10 minutes. I was so nervous that I just blew through it so fast. So, you know, one of the things that you touched on, I would love for you to maybe just give us a little more information, because I imagine that it's one of the common problems that you see is this idea of preparation. And when you say preparation, well, I think I'm prepared, but, you know, I would love to know more about, and also, you know, I tend to probably be, and I know other speakers that do this, pretty comfortable winging it. And, you know, where is that hurting me? So I'm curious, what are the common problems that you see with the speakers that you work with?
That's a good question, because I can say preparation, and people say, oh, yeah, I'm prepared. And then when I ask them how they prepare, a lot of their preparation includes things like practicing in their head, starting their presentation a few days or a week before they need to give it, you know, sitting down and opening a PowerPoint and starting to type in bullets. These are some of the aspects of preparation that I hear from people who think that they're well prepared. And so, I mean, the first thing I want to say is, you know, let go of the need for perfection. because, you know, when we first started out, and I said, oh, no, I thought I may have turned off my mic. And earlier today I was on I was doing my my weekly teleseminar, and right in the middle of it, I got one of those political calls, you know, robocalls on my office phone. And I don't know, for some reason I'm able to turn off the ringer but not turn off the voicemail sound, whatever. So anyway, hello, blah, blah, blah. Somebody starts talking. I had to jump up and turn it off. And, you know, I am not afraid. I am not worried about perfection anymore. I've been doing this long enough that if there's a little mistake here or there or something silly happens like that, I'm like, ah, so what? But so many people feel like they have to be perfect, that they get so scared of making mistakes they completely avoid speaking altogether. And then I think what's a really funny side effect of that is people who don't prepare enough because they're so afraid of, you know, like you said, oh, well, I do better when I wing it because if I write things out and then I forget what I was going to say, I can't, you know, I don't want to look at notes and look unprofessional. Again, there's all these ridiculous reasons that people don't prepare. So first thing I always tell everybody, and this goes back to the concept of making it about your audience, do your research on your audience. Who are they? What do they know about your topic? How experienced are they? What level are they at? Are they beginners? Are they advanced? One thing that I really, really hate is going into a presentation where the speaker assumes I don't know anything, and they start talking to the audience like we're children. That is really insulting to me. But then there's the flip side of that where somebody goes in and starts talking over your head and using a lot of jargon and a lot of words that you don't understand. And nobody in the audience is going to raise their hand and say, hey, I don't understand you, because we're all adults and we have huge egos and we don't want to look embarrassed. I mean, we don't want to embarrass ourselves by looking like a fool for not knowing something. So both of these, you know, both extremes of this where you insult your audience because you think they don't know anything, or you insult them because you're talking over their head or maybe trying to impress them with your brilliance, both of those things distance your audience from you and cause them to be resentful and keep them from learning. And you could easily remedy that by just doing some early research to find out who they are, what do they know, what do they need, want, and care about, which I will say over and over again. And find out, you know, who they are. And then you can tailor your presentation to that group as much as possible. Granted, we all speak at places like conferences, for example, where you don't know who's going to be in the room until they get there. So you have a general overview maybe of who the demographic is or who the main participant is. And so in that case, I would just ask questions in the beginning and get to know people beforehand at the event. But I really think that researching the audience is one of the biggest aspects of preparation that's overlooked. And then another thing that people really overlook is, what is your objective? What exactly do you want to happen as a result of your presentation? What's your call to action going to be? What do you want people to do when you're done? Because if you know what the end result is, then you can build it based on getting to that end result. So these are two things I think that are lacking in speaker preparation that cause presentations to be rambling, to be unfocused, to be unstructured, and to not be a good fit or not be relevant to the audience.
Brilliant. I love that. That was so helpful. And one of the most fun things for me is to arrive early and spend time getting to know people in the room, because then inevitably when it comes time to share an example or call on someone, I've already usually made at least one connection, right, and can highlight someone. So it makes people feel like they belong. It helps with the engagement piece. And, you know, that's easy for me because I love talking to people. You know, I'm very comfortable going in and talking to people. But I understand that not everyone is that comfortable either. And you know, I have friends that would way rather be upfront speaking than just, you know, out networking as well, where they find networking really painful. So I would love for you to shift.
That's me.
No, yeah, I'd way rather be in the front of the room. Yeah, I had a friend in Dallas who started her own networking group because she's so much happier being in the front of the room than in the audience.
Yes, that makes perfect sense.
So as entrepreneurs, though, right, especially for, and I would say even for the corporate people that you work with, because I know a lot of the challenges are similar, you know, how do we really sort of get started as public speaking, and why is it such a powerful tool to grow our business or grow our careers?
Well, I'll start with why it's such a powerful tool. Number one, which any of us who are entrepreneurs especially can appreciate this, it's free. I mean, it's free, you know? And so much of what we do in marketing is not free. A lot of a lot of the kinds of things we want to do in marketing cost money, except for social media. And that in itself is a real, let's see, what was the word? An exercise in infobesity. Which is a word I heard about a year ago that I just love it. Infobesity, just too much information. So, you know, it's free. And that right there should prick up a lot of people's ears when your bank account is, you know, ebbing and flowing as it does as an entrepreneur. The more speaking engagements you can get, the more people you meet. And we've all probably heard this concept of the know, like, and trust factor. And getting out and speaking to live audiences is one of the best ways to build that know, like, and trust factor because people actually get to know you or meet you in person. And people prefer to buy from somebody they know, right, and somebody they trust. And you can tell your story. You know, there's so many things that you can share in a speaking engagement that you can't in your written materials and your, you know, your 160-character Twitter bio. So being out there in person, meeting people, they learn about you. They learn about the way you do business. Speaking engagements aren't a pitch. They're really the beginning of a relationship. And, also for good or bad, it's not a pitch. And this is one of the things that drives me crazy, too, about speakers who are invited to talk at some event where they make it all about themselves. It's not a pitch, but it is the beginning of a relationship where you can, you know, actually make a connection with these people in the room and develop a relationship that goes much further than a one-time purchase.
I love that. Beautifully put.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you learn how to promote your business without sounding like a commercial, which is what I was just kind of talking about, you really stand out from other business people because you're giving value. And a lot of people don't. A lot of speakers just do not give value. And then you also gain future speaking engagements from the speaking engagements that you have. And it may not be right away. I want to tell people that if you go do some speaking engagements and you don't get invited by people in the audience to come speak for them right away, don't think that that means you did a poor job or that nobody wants what you have. Sometimes these kinds of things develop over time. And it's happened to me where several years after a speaking engagement, somebody sought me out to do some private coaching. Then she brought me into her company. Then she moved to another company and brought me to that company. And it's gone on from there. But that took a couple of years. So, you know, it's the relationship building piece that you need to think about. This isn't necessarily a quick and dirty way to make $1 million. I don't care what anybody tells you, six-figure speaking secrets or whatever they say. Speaking is a way of building relationships. It's a way of building relationships. Now, if you want to do the whole sell from the stage thing and you want to run free events and sell programs at the back of the room, that's a whole other topic, and that's not what I'm talking about today.
So it sounds like...
I'm sorry.
That you're
I was going to say there was another part of this question, but go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to add to that. So you're really promoting a speak to educate, give value, and build relationships model is kind of the angle that you're coming from. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
And it's not always the most popular approach as a coach because, you know, everybody out there just wants to make a bunch of money really fast. And that's not how it works. And you also don't get to be a good speaker without a lot of practicing and a lot of work. And unfortunately, that's not popular in our culture to take time and work hard on something and become good at it. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be so much more beneficial. That was a weird way to say that. Beneficial when you apply, I mean, even a few of the tools I'm talking about, too. And I never tell people go out and try to do all of these things all at once, like work on your eye contact and research your audience and do this and do this and do that and whatever. I don't give people 20 things to do to prepare them for their presentations. I'm happy if somebody does one or two things that are really impactful. Mm-hmm. Because those one or two little things can make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to answer the second part of your question. I'm sorry, because mm-hmm. you said, you asked how do we get started, you know, for people mm-hmm. who haven't done this yet. And the truth is opportunities don't fall into our laps a lot of the time, and that's just the way it is. If we want to get speaking engagements, we do have to do some work to make those opportunities. But it doesn't have to be, you're not going to start out on some giant stage. What you can do is take baby steps. So if you still have a job and you're still working for somebody else, take some opportunities to lead meetings at work. When you go to a meeting, plan questions in advance so that you can practice speaking up in a meeting and have articulate questions and articulate answers. Offer to give a report for your team. You know, these are things you can do at work on the job to get practice speaking. You can offer a lunch and learn. A lot of companies do something like that where you can just give a presentation on something that you'd like to talk about. Other ways for getting practice speaking, if you're not speaking in the workplace, you can join a book club, you can give a reading at church, you can join your children's parent-teacher organization and take a leadership role there. It's just about finding ways to put yourself in the position of having to organize your thoughts and express them. So the things I'm talking about here are baby steps to just getting practice, just getting something on your calendar where you have to speak to people. Because this is another thing. I'll tell you, I have people call me for coaching. And I say, okay, great, when's your next speaking engagement? I don't have any. Well, how exactly is my coaching going to help this person if they don't have a way to practice? So I make sure that people that I'm working with are getting speaking engagements on their calendar. And so that could be applying to a conference that's 6 months down the road, which is kind of nice. I mean, when you think about it, you apply to the conference now, and then you hear back in 3 months or whatever, and then you have another 3, 4, 5 months to prepare. You know, that's speaking at a conference is awesome because of that. You have so much preparation time. Find conferences that are in your area of expertise and go to, like Minette said, go to local organizations like Rotary, Soroptimist. We have a lot of networking groups in town that give the opportunity of speaking every month. So you might, if you join a networking group, you'll get an opportunity to give, say, an 8 to 10 minute presentation on a regular basis, plus practicing your short commercial, your 20 or 30 second commercial about what you do and what kinds of things you're offering. So networking groups also are another good way to get that practice.
Yeah, I am in a leads group locally, and there's a really talented florist who had been working for local florists and went out on her own earlier this year. And leads is one of those networking groups where every, you know, probably 6 weeks you get the opportunity to do that little 10-minute, story about your business. And watching her grow into that has been really beautiful. It's allowed her a really safe place to practice. And I know you and I have talked about this before, but I'm curious what your opinion is of an organization like Toastmasters for people that are just getting started, or what sort of place in the market does that serve?
For people who are just getting started, especially those people who want to get better at speaking but don't actually have any speaking engagements, Toastmasters is obviously going to be a really good place to start, because you have built-in opportunities to speak in front of a live audience. So especially for people just starting out and for people who haven't figured out how to get presentations on their calendar, I definitely would recommend that. Just be careful, because some Toastmaster organizations are almost too encouraging. I know this is going to sound weird, but you can go into this organization and depending, there are a lot of different ones, right? Every community has,
sure.
I think we have 17 here in Santa Barbara.
Wow.
The quality of the group is not going to be the same across the board. I mean, of course, they're the same principles and they follow the same kinds of rules, but find a group that gives you good feedback, because you don't want to go and join a group where everybody's going to tell you how great you are every time. That is not productive, and it's not helpful.
That's
just something to keep in mind. If you want to learn and you want to grow, you need to find neutral and critical feedback, not just people patting your back and saying, good job for standing up and doing it, you know? So, just be on the lookout for that. But for more experienced speakers, I think it's a lot more important to get in front of audiences who are not there with the intention of supporting you. I'm not saying audiences aren't there to support or aren't going to be supportive, but you need to get out in the real world where, the person before you went 10 minutes over and now you only have 20 minutes for a 30-minute presentation. You need to get out into environments where people are eating their lunch and talking to their neighbors in the middle of your presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be in environments that are uncomfortable, that aren't tailored for you personally, and it teaches you how to deal with the mishaps and the things that really happen when you're out in the world giving professional presentations. So I say Toastmasters is a good place to start, but ultimately, I know people who only speak at Toastmasters. Okay? That's not what I want for the people on this call.
Right.
You want to promote your business, and
Yeah, no, and, it's I do think if people are truly terrified of speaking, it's a way to get started. But what I really appreciated was the distinction you made about, really the people that you want to work with are the ones that are like, oh, no, I have a presentation at this big conference in 3 months and I need help, right? So that are looking, or I have a presentation at a local Rotary in a couple, hopefully not a couple of weeks, that they're contacting you sooner than that. But that, people that are really looking to up-level their speaking and presentation skills. And I loved what you shared. I thought this was brilliant about outside or just in our daily life, how we can create opportunities to speak up. So the PTA or the offering a lunch and learn or going in prepared and speaking up at meetings. I thought those were such brilliant examples. And, I was at Kendall Summerhawk's big event this last week, Feminine Money Mastery, and one of the things that
famous lady on stage.
Yes, it was super fun, super fun. And everybody's like, oh, you're so comfortable up there. And I said, well, I've been doing it a long time. It's being on stage, I was not always that comfortable. But one of the things, Lisa, that she has always said, and I love that you brought this up, and so I just want to, highlight it a little bit, is she constantly is encouraging a variety of people to just get up at the microphone and ask a question. And all year long, in our coaching program, she's been talking about stand up at the microphone, you know, call in on the phone and ask questions and share your celebrations. And this time we were a pretty small group. And so she was intentionally seeking out, you know, the people who were hiding in the room and getting them to stand up. So cool when they did, because then really so many of those breakthroughs happen, and they often had really powerful stories to share. And so, you know, I think that level of encouragement of starting in these small ways, PTA, right, just joining, I would say even serving on the board of a nonprofit, right, and just being willing to ask questions. Like Lisa and I both go to the Association for Women in Communications meeting, and there's usually a panel or a speaker, and there's always an opportunity to ask questions and to ask them in public in front of the group and not wait till the end and go up and talk to the speaker directly, but, you know, raise your hand. And so I so appreciate that. I think that's really brilliant, Lisa, that you pointed that out. You know, and it's really actually less scary.
Yeah. I have actually worked with quite a few clients on this, believe it or not, on this particular issue of speaking up in a meeting. And because they're not being heard, their ideas are not being heard, their questions are not being heard. And how can they get up and give a presentation in front of a room full of people when they can't even speak up in a meeting? And so I've literally sat down and worked on strategies. How can you be prepared for the meeting? Is there an agenda? Okay, look at the agenda. Look at some things on the agenda that you might want to ask a question about or that you might want to say something about. What other ways can you plan to speak up in a meeting? And I know what you're talking about that microphone, because I went to Suzanne Evans' event in April, and she can be very intimidating, and people were going up to the, you know, she had that mic there, and the lines were not long, and I actually forced myself to go to the mic twice over the course of that 3 days, and I'm a professional speaker, and going up and standing in front of that mic and asking a question where I might find out that it's a really stupid question or I'm a big idiot or something in front of 800 people was extremely intimidating. And that's why I did it. I am constantly pushing myself to do the next thing that's hard for me, which is why I go to networking events and introduce myself to people even though I hate it. Because I need to push myself to get out of my comfort zone. You don't improve and you don't grow if you don't get out of your comfort zone.
I love that. And thank you for being so honest and sharing that, you know, even though you're great at speaking for the front of the room, not all aspects of speaking are easy for everybody, including you. So thank you for modeling that.
Yeah.
And having been on the, you know, receiving end of some of the intense coaching that can come at those types of events. So if you're a coach or an entrepreneur and you've been to a large event, you know what we're talking about. But, you know, if not, it feels like raising your hand in the classroom again and, you know, sharing your interpretation of a poem and, you know, waiting for the feedback from the teacher. It's pretty scary and intimidating, you know. So, but let's go back to talking about actually the preparation piece and taking that a little bit further, because I know one of the pieces that you work with quite a bit with your clients quite successfully is really helping people understand what the main elements are of an effective presentation and how to tie that into this idea of nurturing relationships. So I would love to speak a little bit about that piece.
Right. Well, a couple of them I've already mentioned, so I'll just touch on briefly. As I said, if you're talking about the main elephants in a presentation, did you know elephants are made of elements?
I was thinking it made me think of the elephant in the room when speaking is the elephant in the room.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, now I'm using a line from a They Might Be Giants song. But anyway, back to the elements of an effective presentation. So I already mentioned that making it about the audience is really important and doing your research in advance. And then once you've done that research and know who they are and what they need and want and care about, then you focus on developing a presentation that gives value and that gives relevant and useful tools. And so that's kind of the first element. I just gave a teleseminar today to my Speak to Engage program about openings and closings. I mean, I talked for a whole hour just on openings and closings.
Wow.
Because
wow.
This is one of the most overlooked aspects of speaking, especially closings. Oh, my gosh. I myself have gotten to the end of a presentation without a prepared closing and kind of caught myself standing there looking at the audience going, well, that's it. And
that is
not
so
long
true.
Ago,
I find the closing.
This is within the past 5 years that I've done this. Yeah, I like to make the analogy that it's like when you're trying to leave a party and you can't quite get out the door because you keep having to say goodbye to all these people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 30 minutes later, you're still trying to leave because you can't quite end the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So having a really strong opening that really emotionally intrigues your audience, gets your audience emotionally involved right up front, is important. Number one, because it gets them involved. Number two, because it makes you look polished and professional when you've actually prepared. You have this, you know, great opening so that you look like you know what you're doing. You don't just get on stage and say, "So," which is how I'm hearing a lot of presentations start lately. So that's the opening and closing, and then. Yeah, and then let me give you this one super awesome tip that I like to give that a lot of people haven't thought about before. Instead of closing with Q&A, which is the weakest way to close a presentation, do your Q&A before your closing. So tell the audience you're going to take questions for a few minutes, and then you're going to come back and wrap up and make some final comments or just say it in whatever way works for you. And that way your presentation doesn't end on some random comment or somebody telling some really long story about themselves, and you get to bring the audience back around to your message at the end of the presentation. I mean, if that's like the best tip I give you today, I hope you'll run with that and stop ending presentations with Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
That right there is going to make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you know, you want to have a wrap up to your message at the end. Another element of effective presenting is practice, which we did talk about. It's not cool to waste the audience's time, and so sometimes people who wing it haven't actually thought about how much time it takes to do certain things and talk about certain things. So as somebody who wings it, you might be somebody who tends to go over, or you might leave and think to yourself, darn, I totally forgot that one point I wanted to make. Or especially if you're winging it, your opening and closing might be weak. So winging it is, I consider, really disrespectful to the audience because the audience is taking their time to sit and listen to you. They may be taking time away from work. Like, there may be people on the call today who are taking time away from their work, hopefully not multitasking too much, and giving me your time. So why would I waste your time? Why would I disrespect your time by not being prepared?
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of the rudest things that you can do. So don't waste the audience's time. And then engaging the audience. And, of course, that's a whole other presentation in itself. But basically what I mean by engaging the audience is don't just lecture to them.
Mm-hmm.
But give them questions to answer. Give them opportunities to participate. Tell stories, give them activities, have them turn and talk to their neighbor. There are a million ways that you can get your audience involved that don't take a lot of time and that help them understand your content better and that help them feel like they're collaborating with you and it's not just you standing in front of the room pouring all your vast wisdom into these empty vessels. But that they're actually people who have a lifetime of knowledge and experience. And they have things that they can share. And they have, you know, they're going to apply your concepts to things they already know and understand. So the more you can get them participating and applying your concepts to their own lives, the more effective your message is going to be.
Beautiful. I love that. That was so clear. And I do have one question about that from, you know, especially mm-hmm. for people that are just starting out. So, and, you know, you and I do, we come from teacherly backgrounds and we do a lot of workshops. But when you're giving a presentation and you do only have 20 to 30 minutes, what are your tips to speakers? So, because if you turn the audience loose, like for a partner activity, and I do a lot of speaking to women's groups where, you know, everybody loves to talk a lot. So how do you manage the time? Because when you let go of that, it can be scary to let go of that control and then, you know, gracefully pull them back to the center focus. So, you know, because I agree it's really fun to get them engaged and involved in speaking, but how do you sort of manage that gracefully?
Mm-hmm. So, Minette, I'm not a very graceful person. You've met me. I don't tend to do things gracefully. So for me, I'm okay with being a little, let's just say, unconventional in how I get the audience back. But first of all, yes, I mean, if I have a limited amount of time, I'm going to pick activities that don't require people to get up and move, that I already have timed. I mean, that I've timed it and I figured out how long it takes. Mm-hmm. And so it may be a worksheet. Maybe they do a worksheet and then they turn and talk to their neighbor for 2 minutes. But I'll tell you honestly what I do to get the audience back. I have a couple of methods. I have one of those cow moo cans that when you turn it upside down, it makes a cow mooing sound.
That's
and
so
I will put that in front of the microphone. I'll make a moo. Now, that's for a fairly small room. You know, it's hard. It would be if there's a really large group of people talking, they're not going to hear my cow moo. I also have a stuffed toy American goldfinch that has a nice twitter, that has a nice little song, and mm-hmm. I'll play that in the microphone. And I have a train whistle. I have a toy train whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not ashamed to use any of those things. That's
nice.
Me. You know, that's my personality. Some people will ring a little chime. I think you know Jason Womack. Do you know him?
No. Mm-mm.
He's local here in town. Oh, okay. He has a thing that he does when he wants the audience back. He claps one time. And then he'll say, clap if you can hear me, and he'll clap two times.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll say, clap if you can hear me, and he'll clap three times. And by then, the audience is starting to hear him, so they're joining him in this clapping two times. They're joining him in the clapping three times. It doesn't take more than about four claps till everybody hears what's going on. That is very Jason. That's very much his style, you know.
And it's very elementary school. I love it. They used to do that in my kid's school, right? To get their
and he
attention.
Was a teacher. He was a teacher. That's where he got it from.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, so, you know, and we all have our own ways. And, again, I'm because I come into a room as a sort of a big personality and as sort of a wacko to begin with, you know, my audiences aren't going to be offended when I pull out the train whistle. I mean, it's all in fun. And that's how I get people's attention back.
I love it. So we have about 10 minutes left, and I want to make sure we have time to tell people
mm-hmm.
how to find out more about you. And we probably left one of the biggest questions for the last question is, and I'm sure you have some masterful tips for this as well, but, you know, how do speakers deal with stage fright, right? I mean, I still sometimes get nervous and get those butterflies depending especially on who the audience is or the size of audience, but I used to get so nervous I couldn't eat. You know, I'd be really sick to my stomach ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what are your best tips for dealing with stage fright?
That, of course, is the question that everybody is dying to have the answer to.
Right, the million dollar question.
And I will start by saying that pretty much every experienced speaker still gets stage fright.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
no such thing. I honestly believe there's no such thing as giving a good presentation when you don't have any nerves at all. When you don't have any nerves at all, you have no energy, you have no sort of adrenaline. You have no adrenaline running through you. So this is normal. It's absolutely normal to have stage fright no matter how experienced you are. And like you say, depending on the audience especially, I might get more or less stage fright depending on who I'm speaking to and how big the room is. And I don't try to tell people to cure their stage fright. So I would never tell somebody I will cure your stage fright. But what I can do is help you manage it so it doesn't control you. Because, yes, when stage fright gets too overwhelming, then it does cause things like our voices to shake and it causes us to talk really fast and, you know, all these things. Granted, most of the things that happen when you have stage fright, the audience can't see or have no idea is happening. So that's another thing you need to know. Number one, stage fright is normal and everybody has it. It's like you're a gazelle that's been separated from the pack and now all the lions have easy access to you. You know, this is the human condition is that we are pack animals. We like to be a part of the group. We like to be accepted and liked, and we don't like to be separated out and put on a stage and made to stand there where everybody can judge and critique us, right? So it's absolutely normal, but the audience most likely does not see or sense or hear any of your nervousness. So that's something that I hope is comforting to you, that a lot of people who stand up and are really nervous don't look like it at all. So what can you do about it? Well, I've already given you some of my best tips for managing stage fright and nervousness, and one of them is to make it about the audience. See how I've brought this up like three times? Because when you stop thinking about yourself and how you're coming across and start focusing on them and how you can serve them the best and how you can give them a great experience, your anxiety then is reduced because it's not about you anymore. It's about them. That's a huge way to reduce your anxiety is to do this proper preparation where you focus on the audience. Then something I said before is let go of the need for perfection. Nobody expects you to be perfect, okay? Just focus on that connecting, that relationship building, and being okay with who you are is going to make you look more confident to the audience, and when you look more confident, you feel more confident. And there's all kinds of research about that. You may have seen the power pose, the talk about the power pose on TED. There's a lot of research about when you hold your body a certain way, your brain responds a certain way. And so the more you hold yourself and carry yourself like a confident person, the more you start to believe you're a confident person. Two more things I would say. When I talk about openings and closings, it's the only parts of a presentation I would suggest that you actually really nail down in advance and even memorize. Because when you open your presentation well, you just feel so much more put together and you look more put together, like I just said. The body of your presentation can be more spontaneous and free-flowing, but when you nail your opening especially, you really look like a pro. And then probably the last thing I would say about stage fright is kind of the most obvious thing. Do some quick relaxation exercises. Take some deep breaths. Here's one that I learned that I really like. When you're sitting at a table waiting to go up and speak or sitting at a desk or something like that, if you clench your hands together for a couple seconds and release them, clench your feet together for a couple seconds and release them, it's kind of like those tension and release exercises that people do to kind of help them go to sleep and relax. But it's a mini version of it. It's just your hands and feet, and nobody can see it. So that's a really quick little relaxation technique for your body. And then some deep breathing. And there's a whole bunch of other, you know, mental stuff that I teach people to do to kind of mentally reframe the way they even see the audience and even see public speaking. But I don't have time to go into that now.
Well, and save some of those juicy goodies for people who want to work with you, and because you have so much to offer. This has been brilliant. I don't know about anybody else listening to the call, but I've been, you know, scribbling notes as we've gone along, and there was just so much great information in here that people can really, I think, get a start. But I know I personally always find that, you know, the more I'm willing to ask for help, then the quicker I'm able to improve and reach my goals faster. So I want to encourage anyone that's interested in improving their public speaking to reach out to Lisa, because she is so good at what she does. And she's also so much fun to hang around with and to work with. So just have a lot of admiration for you and the work you do. So how can people find you? And I believe that you have a free offer for everybody today as well. Is that correct?
I do. So the easiest way for people to find me just off the bat is at CoachLisaB.com. That's B as in boy, CoachLisaB.com. And that's just my general website. And what I want to offer to your group is an invitation to my upcoming free five-part video series. And it's starting November 17th, and it'll go for 5 days straight. So it'll be the 17th through the 21st. And every day there will be a short video release. And the topic is public speaking for awkward dorks, as I mentioned before. Embrace your dorkiness and discover your inner superhero. So as I mentioned earlier, this five-part video series is really, it's for people who, you know, think they're too goofy to be successful on stage, or if they think that being goofy on stage is going to hurt their business or make them not look professional. It's for people who worry so much about being liked that they're not being real. And it's for people who compare themselves to other speakers all the time and find themselves lacking. It's for people who, you know, wish they didn't care so much about what people think of them. So public speaking for awkward dorks. And I have to say, one of the most fun parts of the five-part series is that on that Friday, I'm going to have a live Google Hangout cocktail hour. Alcohol is not required, but I'll probably have a glass of wine, or it's going to be a cocktail hour my time anyway. And so everybody who's participated in the video series, I'm going to invite them to come and join me on a hangout and just have a chat and talk about dorky things.
Great. And Lisa, can we find a link to register for that on your homepage?
Yeah. So it's not there yet, so I'm going to go put it there right afterwards, but I'll tell you what it is. So CoachLisaB.com, you already have that. And then after CoachLisaB.com, it's /awkwarddorkvideos.html. CoachLisaB.com/awkwarddorkvideos.html. But I am going to go put that right on the homepage of my site.
Wonderful, and
thanks for sharing the link.
Yeah, I'll put it in the follow-up email with the replay, the link to the replay, because in case you didn't get to take awesome notes and you want to go back and listen, people will get the information on where to go to sign up for that. And I know I'll be one of the first to sign up. It sounds like fun, and happy to share that on social media as well. Lisa, thank you so much. Like I said, I just feel like you gave us some amazing, amazing tips today, and just lots of juicy information for people in any setting really to get started with speaking. So, and I know personally that speaking has been such a huge part of helping me grow my career, even when I wasn't that great at it, you know, and I know that there's still tons of room for improvement as well. But and I think the tips that you share are great for people that are trying to get out there and start networking as well, the asking questions and, you know, looking at it from, you know, what does the other person want from an audience engagement perspective as opposed to a me perspective, that was really valuable. So, again, you can find Lisa at CoachLisaB.com. And if you're interested in her free five-part video series, that was CoachLisaB.com/awkwarddorkvideos.html. We'll be sharing that link with everybody. And I wish I was going to be here. I'm going to be at another event on the 21st because the Google Hangout with a glass of wine sounds just like my kind of event.
I know.
So sounds like tons
of
fun.
Darn.
So Lisa, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule.
Thank you.
I know you were already teaching other things today, and I'm just delighted to have had this opportunity to chat with you and to share your brilliance with my audience. So thank you so much.
And I always love chatting with you as well. So thank you again for inviting me. It was a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Hold on just a second, Lisa, and I'll stop our recording.
Okay.
Goodbye, everybody. Or if you're still on the line and you want to ask a question, feel free to raise your hand or submit a question via the webcast, and I'll take a look at that as soon as I just stop the recording here.